First, how would you describe your relationship with food? Healthy, unhealthy, good, bad, friend, or enemy? All of the above? A lot of us have complicated relationships with the food we eat and with our body image. In her new book, our next guest shares the story of her own relationship with food, and some of her experiences may sound familiar to you. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story of your own to share, are you in a good place now with the food you eat? Do you eat specific things when you feel certain emotions or to stop feeling certain emotions? Have you gone through transformations, back and forths in your life? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Rabia Chaudhry is an attorney, advocate, podcast host, and author of the book Adnan's Story, The Search for Truth and Justice After Cereal. Her new book is called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, a memoir of food, fat, and family. Rabia, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. Well, your memoir is like a memoir. It's deeply personal. And like a good memoir, I think a lot of people will read it. And even if their experiences aren't exactly the same, they may not along with some of your experiences. Why did you want to share this deeply personal story of your relationship with food and body image?
Well, you know, I mean, look, any person can write a number of given memoirs based on their life. It just depends on what you want to focus on. But I thought about the fact that a lot of my work has been public facing, doing all kinds of advocacy on a variety of issues. And when I pick up the memoir or bio of a public figure, you know, I don't want to read like everything I already know about their career. So I wanted to tell a story that I hadn't told before. And I thought one that had much more broader resonance. I know this is an issue that a lot of people deal with constantly. I mean, like, you know, we all have to eat. We all have bodies, obviously. And there's just so many emotions and sentiments and just all kinds of, you know, challenges related to these issues for us. So I thought this was a story that I'd rather focus on because all the other stuff I've talked about at length and written about as well.
Your story starts before you're born, your relationship with food. Can you talk about the food culture you came from in Pakistan and how it shaped your arrival here in the U.S. and your encounter with American food?
Yeah, I was born in Pakistan, and you know the book does start with my parents getting married. I'm the firstborn, and when my paternal grandfather found out my mother was expecting, he was very excited, and he bought a buffalo to tie up in the yard so my mom could get fresh milk day and night to nurture the child and nourish the mother. And you know, so the food culture back home is especially you know in the 70s and stuff, and things have changed a little bit now, but most of it is, you know, fresh. It's whatever's available daily, whatever's seasonal, whatever's local. You just go to your market next door and see what came in that morning. And that's what you decide how to cook that day. And then when my parents came to the US and I came here as an infant, it was a whole different world where you could get anything you wanted at any time of the season from anywhere in the world. And everything was packaged and processed and available constantly. And the abundance was overwhelming. The problem was my parents equated that abundance with and all these options with like good choices, that these are all great choices, maybe even better than what we had back home, not knowing that that was probably wrong.
And an alien thing about U.S. culture to your family was the idea of snacking. That was a big switch.
Yeah, snacking is not, I mean, again, things might have changed, but certainly when my parents were growing up, snacking was not a part of the culture. In Pakistan, you ate your three meals a day and maybe had chai, one tea break in the late afternoon, and that was it. But the idea of constantly having something to munch on as you're going about your day, you know, working or whatever, it was completely new. And then, you know, in America, I mean, having entire aisles full of snack items, it was kind of shocking.
As you mentioned, you came to the U.S. as an infant. You write about a summer trip to Pakistan. Your family had all put on weight, you write. Can you talk about the response you got from relatives back in Pakistan?
Yeah, the first time we returned after we had immigrated, I was about 2 years old. And my parents and I, in those 2 years, had put on a lot of that abundance. And it was very visible. And my grandfather, that same grandfather who got the buffalo for my mother, saw us and was really deeply concerned. He's like, what? And he picked me up and he put me back down because I weighed a lot. I was pretty big. And he said, what have you done to her? And he just couldn't understand. And also, you know, our relatives were like, what have you guys done to yourselves? And I think my parents, you know, they were kind of newlyweds, like kids in a candy store. They kind of didn't even see what was happening to them with all the burgers and fried chicken and everything else they were consuming in America. So yeah, it was I think they very quickly realized that, we need to try to make some changes, but it seemed like they weren't able to turn the clock back.
Now, for you, it seems like there's a slow burn here. There's maybe not one moment, but looking back, when do you think you started to say, hey, people are looking at me differently because of weight? When did you, I guess, first evolve this concept of body image and the idea that people might be seeing yours and you seeing your own in a negative way?
You know, I think very early on, I realized there was a difference between me and other kids when I would get together, like, you know, we'd have family functions and stuff, and the other kids would be so busy playing, they weren't interested in what was on the table and the meal getting, and I was at the front of the line, you know. I was always more focused on when is the food going to come out and then getting my plate before everybody else and then quietly eating undisturbed. There was always that. But the idea that it was like an actual problem probably came around the time I was 10 or 11. And when we went back to Pakistan again, by that time, I understood what was being said around me. And I came back and I took up jogging for the first time, you know. But truly, you know, a lot of it, you know, whether it was my parents or cousins or uncles and aunts and stuff, none of it felt malicious or hurtful. So I kind of I didn't take it real seriously until I probably hit college.
We're talking to Rabia Chowdhury. You may know her from her book, Adnan's Story and the Serial Podcast. She's got a new book out. It's called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, A Memoir of Food, Fat, and Family, looking at her connection to food, our connection to food, body image, and some of the negative extremes we could swing back and forth to and from. You can join in if you have an experience to share of your own, if you're willing to talk about that. Fine if you're not. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Stepping out of the narrative here a bit, you talk about in your conclusion, swinging over your life between food deprivation and food depravity, quoting here, miserable on both ends of that pendulum. You don't write that you're in a magical perfect place by the end of the book, but how did you get out of that that pendulum?
It took many decades. About 4 years ago, when I was in my mid-40s, I finally stumbled upon something that I had never done. And I had tried everything. There's nothing I hadn't tried. And also all kinds of exercises, like running miles and miles a day, walking steps, jumping rope, everything. I had never done strength training before. And I began strength training, having absolutely no faith in it. And I couldn't believe in months, like my body completely transformed. I couldn't believe that my body could do the things it was doing. I had never felt stronger or better. But also, suddenly, because I was feeling stronger and I wanted to keep performing better and better, I just, like, my food choices started aligning with that. I was like, wait, where can I get the most protein? What can I eat that's going to make me like a beast in the gym tonight? You know, and I think what happened at that time was I just realized how much bad information I had been working on all these years, you know, about how I was counting calories when it was never about that, how I was slogging away doing aerobics when it was never about that. And that was really what changed my entire relationship with food and my body.
One of the most disturbing moments to me reading the book, you're writing about your first husband, happily now your ex-husband, who's abusive, yeah, physically and clearly verbally. And he used your weight as a control technique, quoting him as you quote him in the book, "Where will you go? Who will take you? You couldn't even support yourself hooking because no man would pay 10 bucks for you," using your body image, your own, yeah, worries. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, I mean, like, that was, you know, I got married very young. My first marriage, I was 21 years old. And I really did enter that marriage thinking nobody will marry me. I got to take up this guy or I will never find anyone again, because I had just been conditioned to believe nobody would want me. And he was right off the bat, very verbally and physically abusive. And that's when the self-loathing started. Him and his entire family, I lived with them, and they never let me forget that I was too fat. I was too dark as far as they were concerned. They're from South Asia, but they were very light skinned. And I never started really hating myself until that marriage, because none of the things my family said felt malicious, but now it was all very malicious. So yeah, I mean, those things stick with you. And that was a shocking moment to me that that's how he viewed me. And I'm thankful I only gave that relationship 5 years of my life and not more.
We're talking to attorney, advocate, and author Rabia Chowdhury about her new book. It's called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, A Memoir of Food, Fat, and Family. You could join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. Not always easy to talk about our difficult relationships with food and body image. If you're willing to, I would love to hear from you. Again, 800-642-1234. Was there something growing up that set you on a path that you regret in hindsight, in the way you eat and the way you think of yourself? Have you arrived at a happier place, as our guest has? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email at ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with Rabia Chowdhury. She's an attorney, advocate, podcast host, author of the book Adnan's Story. We're talking about her latest book. It's called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, A Memoir of Food, Fat, and Family. She writes about her often difficult relationship with food and body image, how she's arrived ultimately at a better place. If you have a story to share and you're willing to share it, call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Rabia, I think a lot of people might not be willing to talk about this. There's a certain sense of shame, maybe stigma that comes along with weight, with being seen as overweight or obese. That's no secret. Is that important to you to help get people talking about these things?
Yeah, certainly. This is not something I even could have spoken about publicly or written about years ago, and I never have before. And it took me maybe an entire 8 months to a year to convince myself that this was the story I wanted to tell. I knew exactly what I'd be exposing myself to, and I'd be talking about things that people even very close to me in my life didn't know, like the fact that I got weight loss surgery in 2015, because there's so much stigma and shame around it. But, you know, there is something magical that happens after a certain age where you're like, what do I care what people think? Because no matter what, people will judge you. And at the end of the day, if I'm able to be authentic and tell the story, then I know that it's going to mean so much to so many people. And that's what I keep hearing over and over again, all throughout the book tours. I'm meeting people. They're like, we have nothing in common, but this is my story. Like, you have told my story. And it feels so good to hear people's responses. And how one woman wrote to me and said, after reading your book, I have finally released the shame of weighing 100 pounds when I was in fourth grade. I mean, you know, years, decades later, it's incredible.
You were, as you mentioned, in the public eye with your advocacy for Adnan Syed, and you were in, you know, People magazine and on camera and things like that. I would want to do that no matter what I looked like. How was that for you to be stepping into, you know, the makeup room and getting ready for photo shoots and being on camera?
I mean, it was a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And, you know, it was, I have spent my life always avoiding the camera, right? Like my friends, my sister, my cousin, they would always be mugging for the camera on holidays and this and that. But, and I always be like, I'll take the picture. I don't want to be in the picture. This has been most of my life. And so after Serial, there was just no avoiding it. And I had to make I literally had to make a very conscious choice and talk myself down from my anxiety, because I said, either I can literally let the momentum in this case die away because I don't want to be on camera, or I have to just forget about what I look like and how I feel, and all the pictures I'll get tagged in which I'm going to feel terrible about, because I have to think about Adnan. And it seemed like such a petty, petty comparison, right? Like, so I just, I didn't enjoy any of it. It was all torture for me.
Now, and I promoed this conversation earlier today, talking about how you learned to love your body and reading the book more closely. I didn't quite get that right. I realized you talk about the value of learning to not hate your body. Talk about getting to that place.
Yeah. Listen, I'm sure there are people out there who love their bodies. I don't really know anybody like that. And there's almost nobody in my life who really loves their body, but I think I'm just happy being at the point where I don't hate it anymore, which is how I felt about it for a very, very long time. I just felt trapped inside like my own enemy. And so just, it's such a relief to be at peace with my body and to understand how well she's served me given everything I've put her through. So, you know, I, for folks who love their bodies, I mean, that's nirvana to me. I hope to get there one day, and it's okay if I don't though. I'm happy just like, you know, just us being like, you know, calling a truce.
Now, you're a parent yourself. How have you approached food and body image with your own kids after your own experience?
You know, I've done my best to isolate my kids from like all of my own, you know, issues around it, not talking in front of them about, you know, how I'm feeling about certain things. And I've tried my best. I can't say I've done that perfectly, but what I have realized over the course of parenting, and I have children in complete different generations. I have a 25-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 5-year-old. And what I've realized is that my 25-year-old to this day eats the way I used to eat when I was raising her in her early years, in my early 20s. And my 14-year-old eats like I was eating in my 30s when I had discovered salads and I was doing a little bit better job. Like, so what I realized is my kids' palates, and they're getting bigger clues from watching what I'm doing versus me saying anything. They're modeling their behavior. They eat like I eat, and especially in the formative years. And, you know, I began like being much more regular about getting physical activity, going to the gym or just doing stuff. And that's what my 14-year-old is like, because that's what she's seen in most of her formative years, is mama going to the gym. And so now a few years ago, she started going with me and she lifts weights and it's great.
Talking to Rabia Chowdhury, her new book is called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, a memoir of food, fat, and family. Let's bring on a caller now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hello.
Hi.
What did you want to share with us?
Well, I've struggled with being overweight my whole life. I've had weight loss surgery. It was somewhat successful, but I think from the time I was a young child, I was really in a battle of wills with my mother, who was always trying to get me to lose weight, even when I was 7 or 8 or 9. And I can recall going to Woolworths and quick wolfing down a hot fudge sundae before I went home so that I could calm myself down, I guess, or nurture myself with ice cream.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks for sharing that story, Rabia.
Oh yeah, that like resonates so deeply. I mean, we end up getting these dysfunctional relationships with food because of the messages that we're given. And when you deprive children of food or you control it, not only are you like, first of all, you're not going to succeed. What those parents are trying to do, and you know, a lot of times this is part of like how generational trauma works. I mean, it could be that her mother experienced something similar and was kind of transferring and projecting her own body images and struggles onto this child, hoping to isolate them from experiencing the same thing when they got older, but actually reinforcing it. But you know, one of the most tragic things about this, people who experience this their whole lives, is that we feel starved for food. You never feel full, but you also don't feel satisfied. So even when you do the thing, like the stuffing yourself in the middle of the night when nobody's watching, which I did for many years, it didn't satisfy me. I didn't feel happy. I didn't enjoy even the food. It just increased like my disappointment in myself, my self-loathing. And at the end of the day, I didn't even get to enjoy it. I mean, just being at a place where I'm like, I'm actually allowed to enjoy food is such a rejection of what most, like, you know, like a lot of social cues that if you are a certain size, you're not even allowed to enjoy food. And it's so unfair.
Thanks for that call, Kay. Marcus joins us now in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. First, I'd like to say to your guest, I'm sorry that you had to go through that. I went through something similar with body image, but not quite exactly the same. When I was probably about 7 or 8, my mother put us, my brother, my sister, and I into swimming lessons at Elm Grove Pool. And I have a birthmark on my chest that's not very large, but kids would tease me and say, you know, like, oh, you got a third nipple, whatever. My kids can be cruel, you know. And up to this day, I just turned 43 recently. And still, when I go to the beach or a pool, I won't take my shirt off until I jump in, which is crazy because it's like I'm an adult now. But these have long-lasting, lingering impacts that just change the way we are as people, and it's unfortunate.
Interesting. Rabia, that the things that we make get made fun of, mocked as a kid, can stick with us, as Marcus says, through our adult lives. Oop, I think we have lost our connection with Rabia Chowdhury. Or she is not hearing us. Talking to Rabia Chowdhury, you may know her from the Adnan Syed story and the Serial podcast. She has a podcast of her own and the book called Adnan's Story. Been talking about her new book. It's called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, a memoir of food, fat, and family. We have lost that connection with her. If you have a story of your own that you might share that maybe might inspire someone, you can let us know. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. And we can maybe share that on a future show. Do we? Yes, I think we have Rabia. Rabia, we have you back now.
And I'm back.
Sorry we lost you there. I wanted to ask in our last minute, though, and follow up on what you were saying about being able to enjoy food. That's one of the things that made me happiest about reading your book, is that you are in a place where you enjoy food. You share some of your favorite recipes at the end of it. For someone going through who's maybe earlier in this journey than you were, what encouragement can you offer them to end up in that place?
Look, I mean, like, it's not a straight line. I think therapy helped a lot. I mean, getting therapy got me, you know, through a lot of this. And I just want people to understand that everybody deserves to enjoy good food, deserves to treat themselves well with it, not be judged for loving it and not judging themselves for it. But also that we also deserve not to hurt ourselves with it. You know what I mean? So if it's not bringing you pleasure, then that's something that has to be deeply examined, because it just means that somehow you were, you know, you were taught that you're not allowed to enjoy this and you're not allowed to have a good relationship with food.
Rabia, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much again for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
That's Rabia Chaudhry, attorney, advocate, podcast host, and author. We talked to her today about her new book. It's called Fatty, Fatty, Boom, Boom, A Memoir of Food, Fat, and Family.